The unity of the sensorium. The unity of the sensorium is in fact the only explanation for a language that does not convey phonemes, and therefore cannot compete with phonetic language, as it implies chaos, which is due to a lack of isolated images. Hearing, in Herder's theory, is the gate, the very important bottleneck, to the container of unity, which is both the human body and the soul. This unity of the sensorium appears as a speech without tones, that is, how do sight and hearing, color and word, smell and tone interconnect? Not between them as objects, but then what are these characteristics objectively? They are purely sensible discoveries inside of us, and as such they do not all flow into one. We are thinking communal sensoriums, solely touched from different sides, and therein lies the explanation. Now, this concept of the unity of the sensorium is not a timely concept. As I wrote to Karl Popper, it has been a source of inspiration for most Western philosophers in their quest for origins. Goethe viewed the unity as a basic form that would connect all morphological shapes in plants together. Unity of the sensorium also constitutes the basic concept of thoughts about dissolving traditional concrete forms in painting, as it was taken up by Kandinsky to create a new approach to colors and shapes as a necessity to break with the past, as I wrote to Carl Gustav Jung. Further back, the unity of the sensorium also points out the purification of the senses from a perceptual body into hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and seeing. What is even more important, and especially in the case of linguistics, is that the unity of the sensorium seems to account for the chaos that only language seems to be able to overcome by conceptualizing sound. And these conceptualizations are supposedly the only possibilities for human beings to reflect on themselves and the world around them. Hearing becomes the leader of the sensorial unity of this chaos, as Herder explains that seeing could not have been enough for such a reflection. Then even sight was, like children or blinds testify, from origin plain feeling. And in the midst of all these sensorial impressions that overcome us as chaos, both from inside and outside, hearing regulates, educates, and conceptualizes our feeling, that is, according to Herder. We hearing creatures stand in the middle. We see, we feel, but the seen and the felt nature sounds. She becomes the teacher of speech through tone. We become, as it were, hearing through all senses. And here too, in the end, it is the sound which creates time. This time, this mystical concept, which has been so absurdly exclusively connected to language, that is, hearing is the middle sense, displays the time in which it works, and as such the sense of speech. As if touch knows no time, and as if sight knows no time, or any of the other senses, it makes one wonder where all the longing comes from. So the entire image that underlies the language construction, as well as the rules by which it supposedly abides, stem from this image of the body sensorium, in which the subject and the object are not separated. From this one sensorial body, two fields are separated for the sake of linguistic signs. One is the sound, separated from the entire sensible composite. The other is sight, formed into a separate discipline, a sort of a garbage can, called semiology. This chaos is built on the most infinite, unfounded superstitions about feelings, which does not for one moment can be freed of the grounds of the construction of arbitrariness. As it is fully arbitrary in itself, as well as the exclusive result of Western philosophy and thought. You too apply this concept without any form of nuances, that is. Psychologically, our thought, apart from its expression, is only a shapeless and indistinct mass. Philosophers and linguists have always agreed in recognizing that without the help of science, we would be unable to make clear-cut, consistent distinction between two ideas. Without language, thought is a vague, uncharted nebula. There is no pre-existing idea, and nothing is distinct before the appearance of language. You bet! Linguists and philosophers agree. Their job would be degraded to a mere translators if they didn't. But instead of chaos, which is overwhelmingly agreed upon, stands another possibility, which Herder at least maintained as an option. Again, sight is so clear and glossy, it supplies such an amount of impressions, that the soul collapses under its multiplicity of impressions, and thereby has such difficulty in distinguishes that it becomes difficult to recollect these impressions. Now, whether or not Herder was right matters little. The point is that the passive consuming individual in your theory of general linguistics can be quite easily be replaced by a communicative unity of the sensorium, which selects the phoneme as functional. But furthermore, the speech of Herder's view on the individual body reflects an internal form of communication within the unity of the sensorium. Now, without wondering whether this communication can be called speech in a private sense, or whether this communication comes from gods or from mimicrying animals, it makes sense that individuals perceive before and during the process of language learning. The question is not whether human beings are unable to reflect without language. The question is of what components this reflection consists. And there we must conclude that yet another body image lays at the ground root of linguistic theory. Herder too has pondered over this question of reflection. To him it was impossible that humans would originally receive language from God. He actually viewed, as a matter of irony, the arbitrary nature of the sign as follows. All philosophy on the inventiveness of speech floats truly among the clouds, and for us every word seems a qualitas occulta, something arbitrary. Of course, it must be said that Herder too believed that without language there would be no possibility of reflection. But he is more direct by calling this uncharted nebula of yours both extremely bright and therefore difficult to recognize feelings. One might even say that the soul, in Herder's view on the individual body, is more enlightened than its reflection in language. Of course, if one eliminates this soul, as has been done so thoroughly in later definitions of language, it becomes obviously that its godly and occult origin disguises itself as the arbitrary nature of the sign. This arbitrary nature of the sign might not deal with the hierarchy in terms of lower animals or higher gods anymore. Nevertheless, it invents another kind of hierarchy of language.